Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, show 62. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd. And Sean, as always, lots going on in the sports world.
You betcha, man. And there's some great things that are going on for our show. Not one, not two, but three. Yes, three guests that we have on the show. And, of course, it's going to be action-packed, Sean Wally. We're going to be talking a little bit of baseball and football. We'll have Paul Gackle coming on in just a couple minutes. And, of course, we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit of obscurity in sports. We're talking about American Ninja Warrior. We've got James McGrath coming on, man. And, of course, guest number three, Josh Culver. And, man, you can tell him a little bit about that, Sean Wally. Hydros, not actually Hydros, but what is it called, Sean?
Oh, it's still Hydros. It's just not the unlimited Hydros. It's not the big, big, biggest boats. It's the 1 liter hydroplanes, and I guess they got rid of the lights, and Josh has been driving for 3 years now, going into his third year, and he's been around hydro racing all his life, so he'll be joining us towards the end of the show.
Man, well, nonetheless, man, that is crazy, crazy, crazy to be going around in a 1 liter, man, but of course, we'll talk about that, and man, some good things happening all around in the world of sports. What's new?
Well, there was a Kobe Bryant sighting in Seattle yesterday. I don't know if you noticed that. Ironically, the first time he's been back to Seattle since our beloved Sonics moved to Oklahoma.
Man, you know, he said something interesting in one of the articles, Sean. You know, he said that, hey, he loved coming back to Seattle. And like you had said, the last time he was here was playing in the NBA. And he kind of gave a little nudge to Seattle by saying that, you know, he loves coming to Seattle more than Oklahoma City. So let that resonate for all the fans who are Oklahoma City fans. And, you know, of course, Clay Bennett and the horse that he ran in on, came in on. But, yeah, that was a kind of a good gesture by Kobe Bryant.
And what we're talking about, Kobe was in town for the Richard Sherman Charity Softball event at Safeco Field. And over 22,000 people showed up for that yesterday. And it's just the second time he's held the event. The first time last year was down in Tacoma at Cheney Stadium, the home of the Rainiers, and they had to go bigger and better and badder and bring it to Safeco Field.
Man, Sean, can I be a little honest?
That's all we ask for.
I'm still a little hurt that we didn't get a call back from one Richard Sherman. He knows the situation, but it was a great fundraiser, and but I am still a little bit bitter that we didn't get the call to get up there. But, hey, Richard, if you're listening, man, hey, no problem. Just give us a call. Let us know that everything's cool. We'll have you on the show. No problem. But, yeah, I'm still a little hurt.
Yeah, and, of course, we mentioned the Sonics talking Kobe Bryant. Gary Payton and Sean Kemp were back in town, and they were involved in the tournament, in the game, festivities.
So can you imagine that? Can you imagine having Gary Payton in at the same time as Richard Sherman? And of course, the comparisons are eerie with the two. Of course, Gary Payton having, you know, being such a great player, but, you know, always being known to trash talk as well. And, you know, but of course, Gary Payton backed it up, and the same thing with Richard Sherman. And so I can imagine, man, a friendly softball game. But man, Sean, I can only imagine the trash talking that was going on.
Yeah, Sean, did you see what Gary had to say about Richard Sherman and today's society and trash talking? He said there's no way that, you know, the glove could be in today's world because he's not on social media. He's not out there blasting things on Twitter and going on Twitter wars and social media wars, Facebook and all that. He said, you know, I'm going to talk to you man to man, straight up. And that's how he was on the court for the Sonics. And he gives a lot of props to Sherman doing it in today's world where everything you do is under a microscope.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that if that circumstance were the case where there was social media back when Gary was playing, something tells me that he would have been able to adapt. And so, you know, I there are some players that actually thrive on that type of behavior and that type of adrenaline, and it helps them play better. And let's face it, I mean, Richard Sherman is one of those players that comes from the school of Gary Payton to where, man, you know, the more you talk, the more you back it up. And so, you know, two great players.
That's right, Sean. And while we wait for big-time guest number one tonight, Paul Gackle, to jump on the line, you know, we're going to talk with Paul about what's going on in the AL West. And, of course, the Major League Baseball got back into it here over the weekend, fresh off the All-Star break, and there were some wild games.
Yeah, man, first things first, you know, we'll talk about, you know, the series that Seattle had to go up against the Los Angeles Angels. And what a way to come back from the break. I mean, both teams, you know, including the Oakland A's, we'll say three teams, riding momentum going into the break. This is, you know, the beginning of the second half of the season. And, man, you have to play one of your divisional foes, the Mariners, going in against a juggernaut with the Los Angeles Angels. And the Mariners got, you know, got skinned up a little bit, losing 2-3, Sean.
Yeah, it was definitely a tough weekend. You take a couple on the chin. Friday night, the first game back was 16 innings, a marathon, almost two full games. You know, just going through all of your pitching staff and not getting the right hit at the right time. And they ended up losing that game 3-2. Saturday's game goes to extra innings as well. 28 innings in two games, and the Mariners come out on top on that one. Can you imagine 28 innings, more than two games, close to three, actually, 9 times 3 is 27, more than three games in 2 days.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, it wasn't like the Angels just dominated the Seattle Mariners. Of course, the Mariners are, you know, doing their thing as far as trying to stay in the wild card race, and I don't know how many games they're out. I believe they have the second position still. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but, you know, in the division, being nine games out, you know, that just means that the division that you're in, with the record that the Mariners have, well over 500, is a steamrolling division. And, you know, you got to give hats off to the A's and the Angels and the Mariners for doing such a great job.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. And it's just going to be a wild summer in baseball.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, I've just been kind of patting the back of my team, the Oakland A's. I've been saying that this is it's a done deal, but you know, it's not a done deal with the A's only being a game and a half up. And there's some moves that are trying to be made here. You know, both teams, I know the Angels picked up a closer, and you know, the A's are trying to pick up a, you know, some more infield help. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a player in Seattle and Franklin and the second baseman. And, you know, the Oakland A's are looking to shore up that position as well. So, you know, there's some moves that are going on that going down the stretch, we're going to have to see if the Oakland A's can hold this best record or if the Angels can actually surpass them.
Well, let's head on out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines and welcome in a guy that might shed some light on what's going on in Oakland in the AL West, and that's Paul Gackle of GackleReport.com. Paul, thanks for your time.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Great to have you on the show once again, Mr. Gackle. How are things going over in the Bay, man?
Oh, not too bad. I'm not complaining. Looks like it's going to be a good summer of baseball around here, so pretty good. Can't complain.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I know that in Northern California, especially in the Bay Area, there seems to be a lot more talk about the San Francisco Giants. And you know, of course, that's, you know, with just reason. But there is a great, great baseball team across the Bay that's been doing some awesome things the past 4 years. And they've shown some lines of consistency. You know, this AL West is nothing to sneeze at, man. And so what? You know, what is your take as far as what the Oakland A's can do to actually stand pat and win this division out?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're right. I mean, I think that it's hard. I mean, just because Giants-Dodgers is what it is, and you have San Francisco and L.A., it's hard to not get all enthralled and wrapped up in it. And I was talking about this with my brother the other day. It's actually a bummer that we have this other great story in this market that seems to get put on the back burner, because right now I think the Angels and A's might be shaping up to be one of the most interesting races in baseball. I do like the A's chances, having already done it before. They have the experience, and I think going out and getting Samardzija really puts the rotation over the top. Having said that, the Angels are nothing to, you can't take them very lightly. They have the best player in the game. They also have Albert Pujols, who was the best player in the game. And Josh Hamilton's a pretty good player. They have a lot of firepower in that lineup. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go out and get another starting pitcher before the deadline. I'm really wondering to see if they're going to make a move for David Price, because that seems like the type of thing that they do. They tend to be willing to pay. They've already done it with so many guys. Why wouldn't they double down?
Yeah, most definitely. And it seems like the Angels, you're exactly right, might look for that pitcher. I don't know if they're going to look for, you know, a pitcher to go into their starting rotation, or if they're looking to find a closer. They just picked up a closer last week. And so, I'm thinking that they're looking for somebody in the middle that can actually line them up for, you know, for the pitcher, the closer that they just picked up.
Yeah, well, it would definitely be nice to get some help in the bullpen. We know that that's where they do need some help. Wouldn't be surprised, though, because think about Price, Weaver, and Richards there as a 1-2-3 punch. Now you're really talking about serious World Series aspirations right there.
Paul, there were reports out today that the A's like Nick Franklin of the Seattle Mariners system, currently in AAA Tacoma. Is there any chance they work a deal within the division?
Sure. I think Billy Beane's really good with having relationships, and I don't know. Per se, I can't speak to, you know, what his relationship is with the Mariners organization. That's between him and people up there. But he seems to be a guy who gets people to work with him. And I think if he can work out a situation where it's mutually beneficial, you know, a lot of Beans trades are mutually beneficial. He'll give up Gio Gonzalez to get, you know, guys like Derek Norris when he does these deals to get younger. He'll give up Addison Russell to go get Samardzija. So, I could see them working out a deal. They made a deal before with the Rangers in the offseason. Michael Choice, who is one of their guys in their system that they really liked, for Craig Gentry. So I wouldn't put him beyond him if that's what he wants. And if he really sees there's a need for another infielder, which there is, and you might want to have something at least that could be coming up through the system at some point, because they had to give away Russell, who is, you know, a very highly touted infielder. I wouldn't be shocked, no.
Now, Paul, over the weekend, there was a great golf tournament across the pond, the British Open. What were your thoughts coming off of that?
Well, it was just an incredible performance by Rory McIlroy, and I feel like he really cemented his place in the game, although early. But to grab three pieces of the career Grand Slam, just like that, something that only five guys have ever done at age 25, is really impressive. And, you know, he shot, you know, congressionally set the U.S. Open record, set the record at the PGA Championship for, you know, largest margin of win by 8 strokes. And here he is, up here, goes into Royal Liverpool and just tears the thing apart and, you know, put together a pretty nice score. So I think that it was a really, really big win in the bigger perspective of golf, because McIlroy is a guy, you know, like Tiger, he was a young golf prodigy, very, very well known on the other side of the pond, obviously came out of the gates and then kind of slowed down for a minute there. For him to regain it like that, I thought he really showed, you know, when his game comes together, complete game. I mean, he was driving like 325 off the tees. You know, Tiger won this thing by putting his driver away, and Rory just goes out there with the driver, carved it up. The irons were on, the short game was on, and he's telling us that, you know, he really has a chance to be something special. Now, Tiger set this standard where we go in and expect him to win a major every time. And I don't know if that's quite Rory, but he's definitely going to have a very, very nice career, and he's showing that he's for real.
Yeah, it's just amazing how McIlroy, being as young as he is finally getting these big wins, and he's able to have that spotlight and run with it.
Well, yeah. You can't blame him for, you know, he comes onto the scene and you're successful right away. But we were talking about this earlier, me and my brother on our show, is that the thing with, you know, he's a young man and they want to experience life. And it seems like he just maybe got just a little bit distracted, not a lot distracted, but, he got into the relationship there, and this is what he's saying, not me. He's saying now when he wakes up in the morning, you know, golf is the first thing on his mind. That's his drive, and he really wants to push his game to be great right now. So it's not surprising to see this young talent come together like this, and the sky's the limit. But, you know, like I said, it's hard to win golf tournaments. I don't think we can come out and expect him to win 2 or 4 majors every year.
Well, you know, Rory McIlroy is definitely doing his thing as far as, you know, playing some excellent golf. And, you know, consistency is something that we'll look forward to him doing here in the, you know, in the coming months. But shifting gears back to all things Bay and, of course, Northwest as well. You know, there are some things going on in the gridiron. And let's talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on in San Francisco and what's going on in Oakland with, you know, of course, training camps coming up in a week. What's some of the news that's coming out in both of those camps?
Well, I guess the big news right now with both teams is actually more off the field. I mean, obviously, training camp does open up, but Aldon Smith, everybody's sort of waiting to see what his punishment is going to be. You know, he isn't going to have to he's got community service from the judge. So now what is Roger Goodell's punishment going to be? For some of the, you know, transgressions he's had off the field. And I think everybody's sort of expecting it to maybe be around 4 games and get reduced to about 2 games. But, he's obviously a big piece for the 49ers. So I think as camp goes on, everybody's sort of wondering what his situation is going to look like because that's up in the air. And the Oakland Raiders have had a lot of news off the field because they're trying to figure out what they're going to do, in terms of a stadium long term. The A's are trying to finalize a 10-year lease to be in the Coliseum with the city of Oakland and the county of Alameda. But if they do that, at some point, the Raiders want a new stadium, and that would have to get torn down. Now, the Raiders don't know, is there funding for a new stadium? Is the city going to chip anything in? And, of course, Roger Goodell at the cutting of the ribbon at Levi's Stadium last week kind of suggested he'd like to see the Raiders playing at Levi's Stadium. So then that's kind of a strange sort of situation for, you know, Bay Area football to imagine the Raiders and the 49ers playing in the same home, but who knows? So as usual with the Raiders, there's just so much off-field distraction. You'd like it to focus the shift on the field for once, but they really haven't given us much to focus on.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the Raiders have made some great moves. I think that they're great moves as far as solidifying a little bit of veteranism on their team to come into this year. And I think quietly they're putting together a strong continuity. But yeah, you're right, Paul. And that was one of the questions that I was just getting ready to ask you is all of this turmoil that's going on that's kind of brought the 49ers and the Raiders to a forefront to where Roger Goodell mentions sharing the stadium. And I mean, the earth almost stopped on its axis. I mean, the way Twitter took and Facebook took and all social media took, because I mean, I can tell you from the Raiders perspective, they're saying there is no way and you know what that that's going to happen. And, you know, even though it works in places like New York, to where they found a way to coincide with both an AFC and an NFC team, there's no way in the world that that would happen, you know, here in the Bay.
No, well, those guys, I mean, the New York teams, I don't think they have the type of animosity between them. The way, you know, violence breaks out in the stands when these two teams get together. And there's obviously a big culture change between Silicon Valley, which is where the 49ers will be playing, and the East Bay and Oakland and everything that the Raider Nation represents. I think, you know, Raider Nation would be vomiting in their mouth at the thought of going into Santa Clara to watch their football games on Sunday. So, I mean, if it is a situation where they can't find the politics and the will and the money to build the stadium in Oakland, I think Los Angeles is a much more plausible long-term, you know, sort of projection. And Marcus Allen kind of came out and backed that this week, which also made Raiders fans sick.
Now, Paul, what's your take on the whole O.co, the Coliseum in Oakland, and the City Council of Oakland backing what the A's wanted, but they made changes of their own that the A's don't even like, and all of those changes don't satisfy what the Raiders want, which is get the A's out of there so they can tear the stadium down and build their own. It just seems like each is fighting each other, and they're not trying to make it work.
tough to really make sense of because I don't really know what all the parties involved want. I mean, obviously, Oakland, in some way, shape, or form, they want to keep their teams because their this leadership at least doesn't want to see them leave on their watch. But, you know, the boss from Clorox, the CEO there, has been really backing this idea of a Howard terminal little ballpark, which would be very similar to AT&T Park, but along the waterfront in Oakland, Jack London Square. And to me, that's really the thing that makes sense. I just don't really see this Coliseum City idea working at the Coliseum because there are just so many moving parts and loose ends. It makes much more sense to build the A's a ballpark of their own, and then you could probably redo a football stadium, you know, at the Oakland Coliseum site for the Raiders. And I don't know why that's not the will. The A's, now Lou Wolf says the Howard Terminal in downtown Oakland won't work. But everybody seems to think that that's the idea that depending on how much it costs, because there is some sort of, there are some costs that might be associated with the cleanup, which we don't know about. But assuming that they could get that done would really be the ideal sort of place to have a downtown ballpark just like San Francisco where you could go watch the A's. And I think it would be good for the city and it would be good for the team. So I'm kind of interested in what Lou Wolf's motivations are for saying that it's impossible to do when the investors involved, and they seem to have looked into it, think that it's doable.
Paul Gackle of GackleReport.com, great writer for all things Bay Area, all things sports, as well as a podcast host, I should say, I guess co-host, as you have your brother on that show. So definitely check out GackleReport.com, as well as you can follow Paul on Twitter at GackleReport. And Paul, you just had your British Open Challenge, which is kind of like a fantasy golf weekend. How did that come out for you? Anybody finish close that you might be talking to?
Well, I think you had a pretty good weekend there, but you just couldn't really get it done down the stretch. You kind of had a bit of a Sunday meltdown, I guess. But you almost went wire to wire.
What a setup!
He was like Greg Norman at Augusta in '96. It was tough to watch, Johnny.
But yeah, for those of you who don't know, Sean Wally, I believe you finished third in the challenge. Is that correct?
Third or fourth? I might have to go back and check with the leaderboard again. But in that vicinity.
Awesome challenge.
But he's had some good showings this year. Got to make sure you enter the PGA Championship. That's coming up in just a couple weeks. And then the Gapper Report's going to dig a little heavier into some fantasy and have some NFL and college pick-ems over the fall. So make sure you tune in and check in with that, gentlemen.
Well, we have to get Sean Boyd involved in the PGA Championship for sure.
Yes, most definitely.
Sean,
I will partake
in
that
sticks.
One. Yes.
Paul Gackle, thanks for your time. Check everything out at GackleReport.com. We appreciate your insight, Paul.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
There goes Paul Gackle. All things Bay. And, man, of course, always great to have Paul on and, talking, Bay Area sports. And, of course, he's the one that has the ins and outs. Of course, if you want to check his podcast out, be sure to. And Sean, what's the podcast?
It's just The Gackle Report, which he does at GackleReport.com. It's Paul and his brother. So they talk all things sports, all things Bay Area. So GackleReport.com.
Man, that's some great stuff. And so we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have American Ninja Warrior James McGrath on. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll waste no time and we'll go right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two tonight, and that is James McGrath, contestant on American Ninja Warrior. James, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, no problem. It's good to be here.
Man, hey, James, I have to tell you, man, I am so excited to have you on the show. I just got into, you know, American Ninja Warrior. And, you know, I remember it being on USA, and it was this, you know, this phenomenon that was coming to the States, to the United States. And man, I got a chance to watch you participate. And, you know, for one, you being from the Pacific Northwest made it awesome. And of course, you know, as far as you've taken it, I mean, this is your fourth year, fourth go around, is it?
Yeah, this is my fourth time competing.
Oh man. So, you know, I have to ask you. You know, it takes a certain temperament to actually, you know, I guess my question is, how did this come about? Were you sitting and watching and then all of a sudden you just said, hey, this is something that I want to do, and you dove in?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I just started out as a huge fan of the show, watching it back on what used to be G4, is now Esquire. But I mean, they ran episodes of the Japanese, Sasuke. And the very first time I saw it, I knew I had to be on it. And it wasn't, you know, until a couple years later that, they started having the American Ninja Challenges, which turned into American Ninja Warrior. And it was their second or third season where they decided to have open tryouts. So you could, you know, you submit an application. But even if you didn't get chosen, you could walk on and stand in line and still have a shot at the course. And I ended up submitting my application, went down there anyway, even though I didn't get a call, stood in line for a couple nights, and got my shot.
Well, man, James, you know, of course, when you got your shot, you definitely took advantage of it. You know, one of you, I believe your nickname is The Beast. And, you know,
yes,
so I was watching a couple of, you know, I was watching what you do, and you're very limber. You're about 6'2", and, you know, you're a nice size. You know, some might say that you're a little tall for this type of a competition, but I was trying to figure out why they called you The Beast, but man, I figured it out real quick. 3 metal plates in your face due to a touch football game. Kind of give us an idea on that one.
You know, a touch football can get out of hand pretty quick, and I'm always okay with that, but I got some pretty big friends. One of them just accidentally ended up colliding heads with me, and his head is a little bigger than mine, so it won.
James McGrew.
I thought when it happened, I thought I lost a tooth, because I saw a tooth, you know, what I thought was a tooth fly out. It may have just been spit. And there was a big gap in my, in, in my teeth and my lower jaw. So when I went to the ER and got an x-ray, they were like, well, I have good news and bad news. Good news is you didn't lose a tooth. The bad news is you broke your jaw in two places. It's just like, oh, I would have preferred to have just lost a tooth.
That's perfect for American Ninja Warrior. I mean, that you were christened, and now moving forward. That's some awesome stuff.
Thank you.
James McGrath with us of American Ninja Warrior fame. Now, James, what sort of workouts do you do, and how often do you practice these events, whether it be in your home and at a gym? What type of workout regimen do you follow?
You know, I don't follow a strict regimen. I've always enjoyed being active and staying fit. Most of what I do is running. I have a track background, and a lot of what I just love to run. So, I try and run at least 3 days a week. When it comes into, ninja training, I like to do a lot of, I did the 4 and 800 in track. So, my preference is to do speed endurance stuff. So I work a lot of stair routines and ladders, a lot of interval stuff. And then for the ninja stuff in the off season, I just stick to doing lots of pull-ups. I try to go rock climbing as often as I can. But as far as obstacles, I don't do a whole lot of obstacles. Very little of my regular routine is centered around obstacles. And that's mostly because, you never know what you're going to face. So I try and prepare myself for everything. It is crucial to, for the competition that you have to do certain obstacles. So you need time before you go on the course. So you got to just get a feel of some of the things. So like if you've never done a salmon ladder and you hop on the salmon ladder, your chances, doesn't matter how strong you are, your chances of getting through that thing are very, very low if you don't know the right technique. Or even if you do get through it, it's going to be a tough time. So you're going to have a really hard time with whatever's next.
Now, James, with American Ninja Warrior being part TV show, part obstacle course, do you find that there's a balance you have between being able to attack the course and also knowing that there's a TV show and you may have to do an interview and there's cameras, or is it all just complete zeroed in on that course?
When I'm on the course, it's all zeroing in on the course. This is the first time, actually running through in the city qualifiers and the city finals this year was the first time I actually noticed the crowd. When I got up there before I ran, they were chanting my name, which was, to my knowledge, the first time that's ever happened, and it kind of took me by surprise a little bit. And my friend Alan Keneally, who was also the other beast if you watch the show, walked alongside cheering me on. So it kind of it took me out of it just a little bit, but usually I'm so focused on what I'm doing that I don't hear the crowd. I don't hear the announcers. I don't hear or think about anything else except what I'm doing on the course, because the smallest mistake and you go home wet.
James McGrath joining us here on the double. Hey, James. So you had mentioned your training regimen and how you get yourself into shape. And you mentioned that you run track and mentioned the events. And you said, man, I run the 400 and I run the 800. And I sat back here and I thought, man, hey, I ran track. Hey, I ran the 400 and the 800. So James, are you telling me that there's a chance for me on American Ninja Warrior?
There's a chance for everyone on American Ninja Warrior, which is one of the reasons I think it's so appealing to everyone.
That, man, I think I'm going to start training for this thing. You know, I watch you guys all the time and I'm just kind of tongue in cheek and funning because, man, there is no way in the world that I think that I'd be able to do some of that upper body strength stuff. But so are you saying also that you don't have a, let me put it this way. I know that there are people that have obstacle courses and everything in their backyard to put the, you know, that's put together to train for American Ninja Warrior. You have none of that at all?
So I built the salmon ladder, and I built, because the first time, I remember watching the original show, the original Japanese version, and the first time they brought the salmon ladder in, 8 people made it to stage 2. 8 people fell at the salmon ladder, and it was the very first obstacle. And I remember thinking while I was watching that, that no one was ever going to do that, that that thing was almost impossible. But then the very next competition, people were getting through it, and it was so amazing to me. So I thought that there was something to it. Like, no matter how strong you are, there was some kind of technique to it. So I built that just to get the technique. But I mean, as far as my training goes, I only do the salmon ladder maybe a couple times a week in preparation for a competition. So just to, you know, make sure I still got it, make sure I can use the technique efficiently, just so as a little reminder. I also built the floating boards because if you've seen the show, I fell on them last season and again in the USA versus Japan competition. So that was something I was losing a lot of sleep about. So to really figure out why I fell on them and to fix that, I built them. But for most of these obstacles, it's, I know a lot of guys that just do nothing but obstacle training. And I think that can be good and bad. It gets you used to doing the obstacles. But if you're too used to one specific obstacle, because there's a ton of gyms with salmon ladders, not in the Northwest, but on the East Coast and down in Southern California, there's a lot of salmon ladders. If you really want to go find them, you can find them. But if you've gone to the different gyms with them, all the salmon ladders are just a little bit different. They react a little differently. The bar might be slightly heavier, slightly lighter. And the same with the show. The salmon ladder that you go on in the qualifying rounds in the cities is different than the one in Vegas. So you don't want to get too used to the same thing. Because when you get on that new, that different obstacle that they have on the show, it could throw you off.
So, James, what you're saying is the competition that you were in recently, that course, and specifically the salmon ladders, could very well be different in terms of weight and how it's constructed for the finals in Vegas.
Right. It's not the same salmon ladder. It's all, and the same goes for any of the obstacles. Plenty of gyms have warped walls. I've seen some people at Sam Sands gym get to the top of the 16-foot warped wall he has, but when it comes to the 14-foot warped wall, they struggle really. And so all the obstacles, they're all different. So I think it's best to be, you know, to practice on them and learn the techniques that are necessary for the specific obstacle, as a whole, but not for the specific obstacle you're training on. So if you need to do something, the more you do one of these things, the better you get at that obstacle. And you learn the little idiosyncrasies of each obstacle, and because of that, you get better at that obstacle. But if you're doing it on the same obstacle, you only learn that specific warp wall or that specific salmon ladder. And when you take those techniques and try to apply them to a different obstacle differently built obstacle, it may not work out for you.
James, you have one.
So it's better to just be overall prepared.
Great words of wisdom there from James McGrath of American Ninja Warrior. James, do you have one obstacle that might be your Achilles heel that maybe you haven't quite conquered, or that you need to get over that hump and definitely conquer it moving forward to Las Vegas?
No, I don't. I don't really. I feel very well prepared. I think the one thing I just need to get over and conquer is stage three as a whole. I know I can get to stage three. I know I've put in the work and I'm physically capable of doing stage three, but I've made it there twice. I want to make it there again and I want to beat it.
James, of course, now you mentioning stage three and going through and making it through the obstacles. What are the obstacles like when you're walking in public these days? Reason why I ask that is my mother-in-law and my father-in-law really, I mean, they swear by American Ninja Warrior. And of course, you know, we're all rooting you on every time we see you. Do people recognize you in the streets and they say, man, that's James McGrath, or are you still a little under the radar?
I'd say I'm pretty under the radar. I do get noticed every once in a while, and it's kind of cool. But if someone's ever with like a group of friends, the last time I got noticed was a while back, and the show wasn't nearly as popular. So the guy was with a group of friends, and they were like, "Oh yeah, Ninja Warrior, I know that show. Who'd you have to fight?" And I'm like, obviously you don't know that show, but it's pretty cool that the show's blown up the way it has. And I can't imagine how much bigger it's going to get, especially now that, you know, this whole week on the internet, I can't go online this week at all without seeing Casey Catanzaro.
Yes. Yeah, so she was on a television show this morning here in Sacramento, Good Day Sacramento, and you know, she's doing awesome things, and I mean, I believe she's the first female to actually finish the what was it? One of the courses. I guess it was like a grueling course.
She was the very first female to complete a city qualifying round, and then mm-hmm. last Monday she was the very first female to complete a city finals round, which was just incredible.
Awesome stuff. Well, James, I know that you're going to do some great things, and I know that, you know, we're going to continue to root for you and have some great success. You know, we'll look forward to having you doing some awesome things, and of course being a guest back here on the Double.
Oh yeah, anytime.
There goes James McGrath, American Ninja Warrior extraordinaire, doing some awesome things, of course, from the Pacific Northwest and Seattle. And so, man, again, some great success to him. And we look forward to him having those strong successes moving forward. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, guest number three here on the Double, Josh Culver of Culver Racing. We'll be right back. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And let's go right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number three tonight. And that is Josh Culver, the driver of the Y19 Culver Racing 1 liter hydroplane out of Pasco, Washington. Josh, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you.
Man, Josh, thanks for being on the show, man. And of course, the 1 liter hydros. And so, for those of you who don't know, this is a smaller hydro, but man, you're getting up to speeds of, man, let's see, what, about 100, 110 sometimes on the straights? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah. On this bigger course, some of the boats will be hitting about 110, so it should be pretty exciting.
How in the world do you get involved in something like that?
Well, I've been around it ever since I was an infant. My dad's been a big part of this race and been on the board that puts the race on for the last 25 years. And then last year he took over as race director. So it's just been second nature to me. I've always been interested in the boats and actually spent some time crewing on a couple of the Unlimited teams traveling across the United States and went over to Doha, Qatar a couple times to one of their races over there. So it's just always been in my blood.
And now the track, is that what we call it? Is it a track or, you know, it seems like they're
a race course.
So it seems a little bit bigger. Yeah. It's not as much of an oval, if you will, if I've seen some of the races correctly. So the straights are going to be a little bit longer. Yeah. The curves are going to be a little bit wider. It makes for a great and fantastic spectacle.
Yeah, it really does. This course actually ended up being about a mile and two thirds. And this season, we've already raced on two separate courses that were the same length. It just depends. This one has really big turns. So like you said, the straightaways are a little shorter and the turns are a lot longer. So kind of just depends. But it's definitely interesting. And one thing that's different about this course is rather than coming down the front stretch and having to start finish line halfway down, it's right when you come out of turn two. So makes it pretty tough for us to use all of our old notes and stuff for starting, and we got to kind of come up with something new. So it definitely keeps things interesting, which I like.
Now, Josh, when did you get started behind the wheel of a boat in the hydroplane area? I know they start, you know, around 9 years old in some cases with smaller outboards and things like that. Did you start way back then?
No, I wish I had, but I actually just decided to buy my own boat in 2011. I took a loan out, found an old wood boat on Craigslist and decided to go for it. And at that time, my parents were living down in California and they came up for every single race. They drove up with their motorhome just to watch. So they got really involved really quick. And the next year they went out and bought a much faster boat, newer hull. And and then ever since then, we've just been doing good and just tweaking our motor here and there, trying to get a little bit of edge on the competition. But this is going to only be my, fourth year racing. So still learning.
And from day one, was there no anxiety, no fear, just all let's put the pedal down and turn left?
No, I wish. That's kind of something that I've learned to deal with. But it's funny, the first boat I had wasn't very fast, but that was probably the most nervous I ever was when I had that, just because it was something new and I really didn't know what to expect getting into it. But it's just a lot of fun now. I mean, now it's just like second nature. I mean, even last weekend we were racing, and most of the races you're running deck to deck with three or four other boats. So it's, I get a little anxious out on the course, but, just try to overcome that and do my best. But even last weekend I had some repairs to make to the boat. Another boat was right next to me running full speed and didn't quite hold their lane. So we ended up colliding a couple times, but nothing a little fiberglass can't fix.
Josh Culver with us on the double. Spraying a little rooster tail on the whole sports here on the double. And so, hey, Josh, you've got some races coming up. Just ran at Soap Lake. Of course, there's the Idaho Regatta that's coming up. And so kind of give us an idea on how long the season's going to be.
Well, the season, I think we're about half over now. We've had five races so far, and some of the races are kind of dwindling down, whether it's for money or even recently we've had these big wildfires up here. And actually one of the towns that we raced in that was really big into the racing, we were a pretty big event for this little town. And, unfortunately almost the whole town got destroyed by the fire. So it's kind of, I think we have three or four races left on our schedule, which is unfortunate. We need some more venues.
Hopes of moving to the Unlimiteds, the big hydros for you in the near future.
If I ever had the opportunity, I wouldn't turn it down. That's for sure. I mean, that's kind of the dream there, is to get into one of those. And, I think I'd be ready for that someday, but just depends if anybody wanted to give me a shot in one.
Now, Josh, you'd mentioned one thing that you'd purchased your first boat on Craigslist and it was a wooden boat. So how much did that one cost?
I bought the boat for $4,000 and ended up probably putting another $3,000 into it just to kind of fix it up. It had sat outside for a little while, but I just kind of spruced it up, gave it a little paint job, and freshened up the engine and stuff. And it was running okay. It would have been good if we were back in the 70s when it was built, but kind of was obsolete when I got it. But it was a good start.
Now, Josh, being in these 1 liter Y-class hydroplanes, have you ever had any issues in terms of, you know, spinouts or, God forbid, maybe flipping?
Well, my first boat, the wood one we refer to, that I spun that one out once, and that was pretty exciting because I didn't land upside down. And then the second year when we got the newer boat, the skid fin, which sits in the left side of the boat in the water that helps you go around the turns without sliding out too far, that actually broke off. And unfortunately, there was a boat right next to me, and I went right in their rooster tail and aimed me straight up in the air and did about a rotation and then landed upside down and broke the boat up pretty bad. But otherwise, nope, haven't had any issues since those two.
Now, what are you thinking when that's going on? Do you have time to think, react, or just wait until the ride is over?
Well, you pretty much just wait till the ride's over, and then if you do land upside down, you have to wait until the capsule fills completely with water. Otherwise, I mean, because of the pressure, you can't just open it unless you go out the bottom. But by the time I sat there for a minute and watched it fill up, make sure my air mask wasn't going to leak, and then by that time, the divers were already sitting outside my window waiting to help get me out, so I just sat there and let them do their thing, and I keep thinking next time, I guess if it happens, I'm going to try to go out the bottom and stay dry. We'll see how that works.
Now, Josh, I read that your grandmother's a big supporter of yours, although she's not real fond of the water, but she'll show up and be at all of your races and supporting you big time.
Yeah, that's true. She is. She's been, a huge supporter of mine. She always has, and they try to make it to as many races as they can, ones that aren't, too terribly far away, but yeah, they've been extremely supportive. She's been very interested and very proud of me, which has been a huge thing for me. And same thing with my parents. They've been incredible. So, I couldn't do any of this without any of them. So I'm very thankful for that.
Josh Culver joining us here on the double. And of course, Josh, you have a few dates coming up here. As we'd mentioned before, in Tri-Cities on the 25th. The Oak Harbor Hydroplane races in the middle of August, and then the Blockhead Machine presents the Pateras Terry Troxel Memorial. Wow, say that three times fast. And, of course, the Columbia yeah. Cup as well to round off the season, man. And so, is there any type of practice preparation in between, or is it something that, you just kind of go out and do a couple of dry runs? You've done this a lot of times already. What are you doing in between?
At this point, we probably do the most testing between races than any of the other teams because we have the luxury of being able to just launch right down here at the Columbia River and run right where we're going to race, this weekend. But most teams over in Seattle, there's one lake over there where they can go test, but it's only on certain days of the week, so it makes it really tough for any of them to. So I guess that gives us a little bit of an advantage that way, but when we go out and test, all we're really doing is trying new motor, new parts, new tune pipes, new props and stuff like that. But basically all the practicing just happens on the race course because they're all different. You got to get your timing marks and stuff and kind of focus on each race individually. No two are really the same. So
we have the Columbia Cup coming up on the 25th, the Tri-Cities Water Follies. Any high expectations with that one coming up?
Well, the boat, we've been gradually getting faster and faster. There's a lot of fast boats out there, but I think we can do pretty well this weekend. We're gonna try at least. We got a lot of testing time on the water in between races here, so we're always gonna be trying to try something new and get up there and hopefully get a few wins, but a lot of fast boats, a lot of good competition, so we'll see if we can get out there and give them a run for their money.
Josh, before we let you go, if there are any parents and even kids into racing, how would you suggest they get involved and maybe get their 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old involved behind the wheel?
Well, just like I did, you can always find boats on Craigslist. The best thing, too, is to just get information on what the race schedules are like, and families come out, bring your kids down. I mean, there's not really a lot of races around here, but I mean, anytime you go to one, they're a lot of fun. And I mean, the biggest thing for me was all the racers are just very, very nice. They all want to help you, all want to see you do better, and they all want to get more people involved. So anytime you come out to a race, don't be afraid to go up and ask people questions and ask them how you get into it. I mean, shoot, they might have a boat in their garage they'd sell to you. You never know.
Josh Culver of Culver Racing, piloting the U19 1-liter hydroplanes this weekend in Tri-Cities, Kennewick, Washington. Best of luck to you this weekend. Stay safe. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Josh.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh.
There goes Josh Culver, an up-and-coming hydro driver this weekend on the Columbia River in Tri-Cities.
Man, you know, it's going to be very warm. I know the past couple of weeks up there in Tri-City, Sean, it's been upwards of 90, in the mid-90s to 100 degrees. And so should be a great weekend to get out there and watch some hydro action. I have a good feeling that Josh is going to actually go out there and take care of business. You know, you tell me, I mean, what's it like out there on the Columbia River? I mean, we're going to have a lot of white caps up there on that weekend.
Well, hopefully not. I mean, right now the temperatures have fallen back down to reasonable in the mid to upper 80s, possible lower 90s, and they're talking around 90 so far for the weekend. The wind and some possible storms the next couple days, but that should pass before the weekend gets here. So it should be like glass on that water. And you got about 75, 80,000 people on the shores of the Columbia River just for the hydros. So Josh will have a lot of spectators watching as he turns left, trying to take that checkered flag.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express as we wrap up show 62, and it was a big one. Three big-time guests. You know, Sean, if I'm not mistaken, three guests 2 weeks in a row, correct?
Yeah, three guests 2 weeks in a row, and of course this week was, man, what a great show today, man. I mean, you know, of course, whenever Paul Gackel comes on, we're going to get some awesome insight for all of our Bay Area listeners, talking all things Bay Area. But today was very special, you know, going outside the box and thinking outside the box, Sean Wally, having American Ninja Warrior James McGrath on, talking about his preparation and what he does there. That airs on NBC. And, of course, our last guest, Josh Culver, talking about hydros. And, of course, this time of the year is definitely the fun part of the year for hydroplane racing. And so, you want to talk about different sports, your American Ninja Warriors and hydros. Man, this makes for a great show, Sean Wally.
Yeah, it's always fun to go somewhere we haven't gone before and tell a new story and learn something about new people and new sports.
Well, you know, James had me going there when he's saying he's a middle distance runner and that's how he trains and everything. And next thing you know, he's on American Ninja Warrior. I can tell you he looks a little more fit than I do. Man, I'm going to live vicariously through James and continue to cheer him on. But, you know, as far as Josh is concerned, boy, I'd love to get into one of those hydros. But, man, if you're getting up to 115 miles an hour on the water, man, that has to be a blur going by, Sean. I can't even imagine being on the water going that fast.
I can't get you in a raft, but you want to go 100 miles an hour in a hydro.
Man, hey, it's a little capsule, man, but they look cool. You know, and I'm enamored by the way they move and how they can get around the course there. But, you know, yeah, a raft, that's different, man. And you're talking about white water rafting where you get bumped out of the boat. You got the tour guy in the back. He's lost. That is just crazy stuff.
It's so much fun. So much adrenaline.
Yeah, swallowing half the river. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Water is good for you. Come on now. Necessary for vitality.
And all the amoebas and everything else that is in that water. Just amazing.
That's right. All the freshwater river amoebas.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you stick to whitewater rafting.
Well, hey, I think next month we're taking a trip. Me, you know, our IT guy, Kevin, and Brock, and maybe a few other people. So come on out.
Yeah, no way. You sent me the pictures, and, man, I tell you, you sent me a three-shot, three pictures of what was going on, and I believe the picture in the middle, all I saw was the front part of the boat, and you guys were lost. Everything was whitewater. You're under, and then the next thing you know, you guys are out there, and you know, with oars in the air and all kinds of crazy stuff. No, I'm gonna pass on that one.
In fact, that's the same river we're gonna take part in and conquer next month in August, and that's a 10-foot waterfall, the largest commercially raftable waterfall in the country.
Well, have fun.
Come on out, I'll save you a seat.
Yeah, you better fill it with somebody else because you're going to need to, you know, have that boat weighted down most definitely. So awesome stuff.
All right, Sean, show 62. Much thanks to Paul Gackle, James McGrath of American Ninja Warrior fame, and of course, Josh Culver, Culver Racing. The 1 liter hydroplane out of Pasco, Washington will be racing this weekend in the Tri-Cities at the Columbia Cup.
Should be a lot of fun. And, you know, of course, up your way, that's always a great time of the year. And as you were mentioning, I mean, man, how many thousands of people did you say were going to be up there?
They expect anywhere from 70 to 85,000 just in town for the hydros. Not to mention the 180, 200,000 people in the area.
Man, so that's got to be an awesome economy boost up there in the Tri-Cities, no doubt. Of course, we've got some big things coming up next week that we'll probably be talking about. And what I mean by that is training camps will be opening. We didn't really get a chance to talk about our favorite teams, the Raiders and the Seahawks. And of course, the Seahawks are looking to repeat as Super Bowl champions. So that's going to be a fun show for us next week.
Absolutely. And a quick update in Seattle from Safeco Field. The Mariners 3, the Mets 1, and the New York Mets are in town for the first time since 2005.
Atta boy. Of course, that's my boy, Sean Wally, making sure that we are up to date with Seattle Mariners baseball. Show number 62 in the books. It's been a great show. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd, engineer Don Newsom. You've been listening to On the Double. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double, Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double, Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw